From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of November 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and serves as their senior grains analyst. We'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and discuss what's been happening in the weather forecast in the United States and around the planet. That with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, we'll check the agricultural news for the afternoon. I'll bring you back up to speed on the RFS and the EPA, and we'll hear how that will have an impact on the price of soybeans, soybean meal, and corn from Daryl Good. That all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. It is the 28th day of November. We're now joined by the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities out of Normal. His name, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it flew by. The area was a little warmer than drier, and I'm back here in the wet and cold now, so it went by fast. Thank you.
I know that you were down south. You brought a little rainfall with us. Farmers in the area are pretty much cleaned up in that process, the harvest, that is. They've shut the bin doors. There are a few soybeans that are yet to be harvested. Not great weather for that. However, I don't know that the soybeans and the rally we've seen in the last week has a lot to do with what's out in the field or not coming in, because it's just such a big crop. Another dime higher today. Why was that the case?
That's simple. It's Cyber Bean Monday, and if they were on sale, they were on fire. That rigged bean market started out firm once again from Asian buying. I don't know, Stuffy or somebody from the CME, the old Board of Trade, basically said we've seen a large increase of Asian activity in the overnight. And that shot beans, they traded as much as 20 higher overnight. Then as we got in our session, it kind of cooled down. Then once 9:30 came around, and the significance of 9:30 is that's the old grain open pit trade, and a lot of commercials. If you watch 9:30, you see some commercial activity. That's when beans went negative. And so I think we saw a little hedge pressure coming at that time. But once that was taken care of, we stabilized, and then late in the day, we saw speculative buying come back into the beans and move higher. But no, it's been a textbook perfect move, a pre-harvest low. Guys have filled the bins and don't want to move grain that's been put in the elevator where you pay minimum storage. So stick to the plan here. We should stay firm until about December 20th, and after that, we could be subject to some year-end. But the bean market, basically, China commercials have been buyers. Chinese or Asian speculators have been buyers. Made a little uncertainty about our trade policy, but the main thing is that Chinese currency continues to drift lower. They lose a little bit of purchasing power there, so they've continued to want to try to support or have some hedges on or have some coverage on. And also, too, this world vegetable oil remains firm in through here. So when you look at futures versus cash, we've got ample supplies of beans around. Basis at the Gulf is actually, you know, some lows we haven't seen for 4 or 5 years, which suggests that a lot of this activity has been paper here as we've gone through the last 2 months. The key question is, will they take some of this off here as we go into year end or not, and we'll have to monitor that. Upside targets, though, when you look at the January futures, if you take the high back last spring, 1061 is halfway back up to that high. Last night's high was 1065, so I'd sort of watch that area as some resistance. And then if you're wanting to look on further out to new crop, if you take the high in the contract and the low, this 1043 is 62% back up to the highs. Today's high was 1043. Of course, I've got sell orders at 10:45, so I'm trying to stretch it and wish a little bit more on that. So we're in an area here on the beans where we can maybe cool down for a little bit and see if we have a little correction on. The news tomorrow, baseline forecast, their November numbers. These are budgetary numbers they put out. Then we'll have a better indication in February. But the fundamental guys watch this very closely because they're in the mindset that if the normal weather pattern develops, the USDA is fairly close on some of these long-term projections, or at least the trend on it. So that might give the market a little direction tomorrow. I think it's around 10 a.m. time.
Any concerns out of the South American growing season at this time? We haven't checked in for about a week or so.
I mean, Argentina's starting to get caught up a little bit, but for the most part, there's not a lot of fear there. I think if there's some develops, it's going to happen after the first year. When you look at the overall demand structure, once you get January on, South American beans are a lot cheaper than our beans. So probably the thing to watch is South American bean demand out of Asia, see if that trade floats there to get some cheaper South American beans.
Dow Jones Industrial Average still in fresh new high areas or above 19,000 at least. The U.S. dollar is at 101.385. These are both pretty lofty places.
Yeah, we've seen the Make America Great Again kick in. We've kind of removed fear from the investors' point of view. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty in front of us, but overall, when you look at the big picture here, as far as the companies involved in the Dow, it's been relatively strong, whereas the NASDAQ has been a whole different story. You know, it took the big hit there and probably could struggle. But as long as that Dow can hang in there, you can have overall investor confidence, you know, help support the marketplace here as we move into the new year.
Hey, thanks so much. You have a good week.
All right. Take care, Todd. Thanks.
And, of course, Kurt Kimmel, he's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll make today's agricultural news all about corn. The U.S.-China Joint Commission on Commerce and Trade talks last week appeared to have yielded little progress on getting China to improve its approval process for biotech crops, long an issue for U.S. farmers. In prior talks, Beijing committed to more transparent, predictable regulatory approvals for GE crops, a process that now starts only after regulatory procedures have concluded in the United States or certain other key nations. Without GE crop approvals by China, an extremely important export market for the U.S. because of its size, U.S. farmers will not start cultivating those new hybrids. In a statement on Friday, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack blamed the process in China for stalling innovation and said that U.S. officials will be watching the meeting of China's National Biosafety Committee set for next month. He said, "We're disappointed that further progress was not made on agricultural biotechnology issues," going on to say a lack of progress on biotech issues will continue to add years to the process of commercializing them, will slow innovation and set back global efforts to address food security and climate change. We'll stay with the corn theme for today. For the third year in a row, Midwestern corn and soybean farmers aren't expected to have profit margins that cover all of their expenses. This according to a report on the 2017 Outlook for Field Crops published last week by Rabobank. The forecasted gross margin of $93 per acre next year means that producers who are highly leveraged or got into business recently are particularly vulnerable to financial distress. Whether margins rise to more sustainable levels depends on if and how fast land costs decline, because the prices of other expenses like seed and fertilizer are expected to hold flat, the report notes. For wheat growers in the Great Plains, record yields in 2016 more than offset a drop in prices for the grain, improving their profit margins slightly. But gross margins are expected to fall back to 2015 levels, or just under $80 an acre. You can read, of course, the whole report online. Just look it up under Rabobank and Agriculture. And finally today, just a reminder that EPA last week on Wednesday released the 2017 mandates for renewable fuels, setting corn ethanol at the statutory level of 15 billion gallons, drawing raves from farm groups and ag state lawmakers. This is critical for farmers facing difficult economic times, said Wesley Spurlock. He's the president of the National Corn Growers Association. He says the renewable fuel standard has been one of America's great policy success stories, although we believe the EPA did not have authority to reduce the ethanol numbers in the first place. He says, we, the NCGA, are pleased to see the RVO finally back on track. We'll have more on EPA's announcement and what it might mean to the corn market as it relates to soybean oil in just a moment. But first, we'll get this story from Rod Bain. He talked with Christopher Burns at the Economic Research Service, that's USDA ERS, about a study that looks at the state of mid-sized farm operations and changes in their organization over a two-decade period.
Are they disappearing? I don't think so.
USDA economist Christopher Burns referring to mid-sized farms in the U.S. These operations are the focus of a recent Agriculture Department study conducted by Burns and colleagues at the Economic Research Service. And no, mid-sized farms are not disappearing. However,
their numbers, they've gone down slightly.
Down 5% from a 20-year period ending in 2012. And in fact,
we find that they are a more mobile size group. In other words, between census years, we found that they were more likely to move up or down in size.
Burns offers another factor in the change in mid-sized farm numbers over those two-plus decades, what he calls exits and entries of farmers of mid-sized operations, whether through growth or other transition.
When we look at exits and we look at what sorts of factors affect your probability of exit, we found that mid-sized operations with a beginning principal operator, 10 years or less of experience, were more likely to exit farming, and that's consistent with other studies that have been done on beginning farmers. Essentially, that just means experience matters. Having spent more time farming means that you sort of know the business better and you're able to manage your operation in a more sustainable way, or maybe you have access to more capital because you've been farming for longer.
Also, operations that tend to rent more of their land were more likely to exit.
And I think that speaks to operations that are probably newer to farming.
Other findings from the ERS study include
the principal operators have gotten older on the typical mid-sized farm. That's sort of right along the same lines as what we see with the overall farm sector. They've also become more highly educated, so a greater proportion of them have some college or completed college, which is also in line with the rest of the farm sector. Mid-sized farms have become more concentrated. Their production has become more concentrated in cash grain and oilseed crops over this time period and has shifted away from production in dairy and other crops like hay, tobacco, and cotton during that time period.
Burns adds that there were a greater proportion of female principal mid-sized farm operators during the time period of the study. Also, mid-sized farms in 2014 generated more net farm income and with higher levels of financial efficiency than in 1992, when the study period began.
A lot of that's been driven by increases in land values. Between 2000 and 2014, they've also seen higher levels of farm income. So the average mid-sized farm has higher farm household income and also total household income.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, the price of soybeans rallied about 10% from mid-October to mid-November. It came despite the record-size crop harvested in the United States. We'll hear more in just a moment. Farmers have been in awe of the soybean market since mid-August. There have been a few reasons for it to rally. A short crop out of South America and a drought-constrained supply of palm oil coming from Indonesia, for instance. Still, the U.S. soybean crop is big, mighty big, in fact. Yet the price of soybeans has gone higher. Well, Daryl Good writes about it in this week's Weekly Outlook. You may read it online at FarmDoc Daily. There are two unusual things about this price rally. Well, one really, but it's driven by the first. The rally has come because the world seems to be short of vegetable oils. Soybean oil is among those. Here's the important part. Soybean oil-led rallies generally do not last. And Daryl Good thinks this one might, and that it could change the dynamics of the soybean complex. The change is driven by the renewable fuel standard. The RFS did the same thing for the corn market when it began to ramp up ethanol production in the United States more than a decade ago. Well, the soy complex is made up of three parts: the price of soybeans, the price of soybean meal, and the price of soybean oil. The last two are the products derived from the soybean when it's processed, crushed. The EPA RFS announcement made last week initially resulted in a surge in soybean oil and soybean prices, increasing soybean oil consumption for mandated advanced biofuels, in this case biodiesel production, this year and beyond may require the domestic soybean crush to be larger than previously thought, concludes Darrell Good. He says this could lead to some long-term pricing questions. Historically, domestic crush has been driven by soybean meal demand. If it's driven instead by soybean oil demand, this could result in lower soybean meal prices. Soybean meal has a short shelf life. Its price would need to be low enough for it to be used quickly. The impact of higher soybean oil prices and lower soybean meal prices on the price of soybeans, well, that's difficult to anticipate. However, a surplus of soybean meal, says Good, might result in lower soybean meal prices relative to feed grain prices. It could cause the soybean meal to corn price ratio that has ranged from 2.55 to 3.2 in recent years to decline. The historical range is 2 to 2.5. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Greg Johnson is with us from the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me a little bit about the marketplace and what you've seen over the last few days.
We are finally starting to see some farmers reward this bean rally. And from what I understand, across the whole Midwest, it was very busy today. Farmers were selling both old crop and new crop soybeans. We've rallied $1.20. From our October lows, and farmers are finally starting to say that sounds like a good price, and let's sell some. And so we saw both old crop and new crop sales made today, and I think that's what was going on across the Corn Belt.
Is this a good idea given what you saw from the RFS last week?
Yes. Obviously the speculators are jumping on board. I mean, you don't know how much, the RFS will continue to push this higher. You have some traders that are buying in based on those stories. But the bottom line is, we know we can make money with, we grew 60, 65, 70 bushel beans in our area. And if you can sell them for over $10, that, that locks in a profit. So, the corn market's not to a point where we can sell corn at a profitable level unless we had really, really good yields. But we can do that on beans, so why not sell some beans and hope it keeps going higher? Because if it does, then corn's going to go higher and we'll sell some corn. But when the market gives you a chance to take some profit, let's take some profit, I think, is the attitude today.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. On the other line is Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois, to discuss the weather forecast. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us. Can you start in South America for me? Give me a look at what they've got coming up.
Well, before talking about the forecast highlights, let's talk about some of the important recent past weather items that we've seen. And one of those key features was widespread significant rainfall across Argentina this past weekend. In fact, we saw thunderstorms develop across some of the driest areas of Argentina, namely northern Buenos Aires province, but even the areas of Entre Ríos, Santa Fe, Córdoba. The highest totals were in areas of northern Buenos Aires, where amounts were greater than 1 inch, but even some totals verified even higher than model expectations, with totals upwards to 3 or even 4 inches in a few isolated locales. So all in all, it was a really good rain event for Argentina, which was needed because Argentina has trended drier in recent weeks. Now, again, there's a few dry pockets around, but those dry pockets will have another rain opportunity coming up. In fact, the timing of that next opportunity is around December 4th and 5th, when another wave of low pressure tracks into the region. And as it looks right now, it looks like another really good rain event for the belt as a whole. And it's going to come down to here, can those remaining dry pockets pick up rain with that next event in Argentina?
Let's work our way northward, but not very far to the north. Pick up some of the soybean growing regions in Paraguay and Brazil. What's of interest there?
Those areas also are in a pattern that is quite favorable, and the rains in Argentina have moved into Uruguay, Paraguay, southern Brazil. In fact, rainfall amounts over the next couple of weeks look near to even above normal, with the highest totals in areas of the northern corn and soybean belt in Brazil, namely in Mato Grosso and adjacent areas. That's where totals look to be the highest, and that's going to continue to provide favorable conditions across Brazil, or Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay. Bottom line, Todd, there's just simply no sign of any big red flags across South America as we move into December.
Can we get some of that same kind of rainfall, maybe from a different place, into the southeast this week in the United States?
Yeah, Todd, actually that region will be picking up needed rainfall. And in fact, not just the southeast, but across much of the central and eastern U.S., significant totals, in fact, just over the next couple of days as a storm system tracks across the region. In fact, the driest acreage there of Alabama, Georgia, into the Carolinas, rainfall amounts look to be anywhere from 1 to 3 inches, with some of the highest totals in areas of northern Alabama, northern Georgia, which have been the driest areas of late. So, yeah, very good timing here for seeing a significant precip coming up across that region.
Mark, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. Look forward to talking with you again next week.
Yeah, same here, Todd.
That, of course, Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online at willag.org.